Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we are talking about some news on Giga Texas and Giga Shanghai, a little bit on the Russell 1000 index rebalance. I've seen some confusion on that, so we're going to go through how that works. Then we also have a few other updates, like a new analyst update from Credit Suisse, and news on the annual shareholder meeting. So a quick look at the stock to wrap up the week. Tesla today finishing up 4.5%. Not the best day considering the NASDAQ was up 3.3%, so I mean, I'll take 4.5%, but usually Tesla's beta would be or would necessitate a little bit of a better performance than that. But again, no complaints with up 4.5%. But nothing really Tesla specific, I think, driving that price target or that price action today. We did have an analyst update here from Credit Suisse, as I mentioned, so we'll go through that quickly. Dan Levy did lower his price target on Tesla from $1,125 per share down to $1,000 per share. So a very similar decrease to what we had just seen from Adam Jonas and Morgan Stanley. They lowered their expectation for second quarter deliveries to 242,000. It's quite a bit below consensus here, which is noted as 280,000. But remember, that's just the analyst consensus, and a lot of analysts have been in the situation where they haven't updated their forecast to account for the COVID shutdowns yet. So as we had talked about before, buy side expectations are somewhere in the 255,000 range at last update. And those are always kind of like whisper numbers. There's no official consensus, but I think that's where the broad expectation is. So Credit Suisse, even a little bit below that. They moved their second quarter earnings per share on a non-GAAP basis down to $1.10, accounting for Bitcoin impairment, the lower deliveries, things like that. That's quite a bit lower than where I'm at in my model. He did also note, though, with keeping his overperform rating on the stock, that the widening supply constraints would likely extend Tesla's lead over other OEMs in the race to EVs. That's a concept that we've talked about before, both just the macroeconomic circumstances here likely accelerating the transition to energy independence and electric vehicles, but also we have seen these supply constraints push other automakers' sales down, you know, 20 to 40%, where Tesla has continued to grow because of their flexibility and their aggressive planning in the supply chain. So Credit Suisse kind of acknowledging that. And then, as I mentioned, cut the price targets, but that was due to a higher discount rate. So just like what we've seen from Morgan Stanley, as I said, with their price target cut, and then Alex Potter, Piper Sandler, similar reasons for their price target reductions there. So that was the price target update. And then on the Russell 1000 index, what I want to talk about here, I've seen quite a lot of confusion on this today, and the media has not done any service here to try to help people understand this. So a lot of misreporting on this, confusing people. Ben Zinga here reporting similarly to what Barron's had reported, that the Russell 1000 index was rebalancing today. So they do this annually. It talked about how Tesla is going to be moving up one spot in the Russell 1000 index. They talk about how that's the first time that that's happened since 2019, where the largest five companies in the index have been reshuffled. And then they go on to quote some analysts here saying that Tesla's improved ranking will likely bring in more buyers from other investors whose portfolios mirror the index or things like that. So it sounds like this is kind of a big deal, like, oh, Tesla's moving up in the rankings, like more people are going to buy it. Is this at all similar to the S&P 500 inclusion? No, not at all. We should have talked about this yesterday. I didn't realize it would get so much attention. And we had, you know, the other stuff we were talking through yesterday. But as you can see here, not the biggest volume day compared to what we've had this week, you know, tying for the lowest volume day. I guess the lowest volume day all week, and pretty much the same volume that we had seen last Friday when there was no Russell 1000 index rebalancing. So there's a reason we didn't talk about this. It's because it's really not important, just like the S&P 500 rebalancings, that those happen quarterly. But because I've seen a lot of misunderstanding on this, I wanted to go through exactly how this works. So as you can see here, this article calls out that the Russell 1000 index is a market cap weighted index. So just like the S&P 500, that means that as market caps fluctuate with stock prices, the weights of the stocks in the index also adjust, right? Like if a stock's worth $100 and it goes up to $150 and everything else stayed the same, that's going to have a higher weight in the index because it has a higher share price. So just to help people understand exactly what's going on with these rebalancing situations, I wanted to put through just a very simple scenario here. Let's say our index is the Russell 4 or something like that. We've just got these four simple stocks here, company A through company D. We can see their market caps here. So company A at 100 billion, company D down to 25 billion. The total index market cap then would be $200 billion. Of course, there needs to be a weight of 100%. So if you have a $100 billion company, they're going to be 50% of this small little index that we have here. Let's just say that off the beginning, our index price is $200 per share for the entire bucket of that stock or of those stocks. So then let's say, okay, year goes by, Russell 1000 is rebalancing every year. So here we're a year forward, company A hasn't moved, their market cap has just stayed the same, so their share price has stayed the same unless they've done things like stock buybacks, which we'll talk about in a second. Company B, so they went from 50 down to 40 billion. Company C had a great year, so let's just imagine that company C is Tesla. Their market cap tripled, so their weight in the index has gone up. Company D also struggled, so they went from 25 billion down to 10 billion. So if we add all these up, our total market cap of the index now is $225 billion. We can see how the weights of each of those stocks has changed. And that just happens as prices change, right? Like if this company was $25 a share last year, and now it's $75 per share, its percent of the index is just rising and falling as those share prices change and as all the other companies' share prices change. So there's no need to do any rebalancing. If our total market cap of the index went up by $25 billion, and there, again, was no buybacks or anything like that, then the price of the index would have gone up by, you know, almost a little bit above 10%, up to $225 per share for the index. So I've got a note here that says the underlying index value increased, the weights adjusted automatically, and the index price rose. So what's happening when you're rebalancing is, let's say that company D, okay, it dropped from 25 down to $10 billion, like that company is doing poorly, let's kick it out of the index, right? Let's replace it with this brand new company E that's, hey, a $25 billion company. Now all of a sudden our total market cap for this index is up to 240 billion, because we kicked out a $10 billion company, we added a $25 billion company, so we added $15 billion of market cap to our index. That doesn't mean we can just raise the price of the index, right? Like that should not generate a return for anyone that holds that index. If it could, you would just start off with an index that owns one really small company, and then you'd go and buy Apple, or you'd go and add Apple to the index, and all of a sudden you just have the best returning index that's ever been created in history. So you can't just add stocks and then make your index price go up. So the price must stay the same, even though we adjusted the companies that are in that basket. So we've now got a $240 billion market cap combined, but we need to keep the index price the same. So this is what the rebalancing does. We added this company, now we need to adjust the weights so that you know, our share price is staying the same, but everything gets reweighted with this new higher market cap because we brought in this more valuable company. So in this case, you've got company A, which hasn't had their market cap change at all, but everything else has, went down from 44% to 41%. So the index and anything that's benchmarked against the index that wants to stay at that, you know, equal weight to what the index is, has to sell down company A to get to 41%. And then they have to use that extra cash that they generated to buy company E up to 10% of the portfolio, which previously was zero. So in this case, you're losing a little bit of company A from the index and gaining a little bit of company E. Company E here would be like what happened with when Tesla was added to the S&P 500, where all this buying has to happen at once to get to that weight. And Tesla was such a high market cap company at that point in time that it was a significant weight. But here in this example, like again, if we assume company C is Tesla and there's this rebalancing of the Russell 1000, okay, all that means is that company C is going from 33% down to 31%. And usually these indexes have such large market caps that the ins and the outs of new companies replacing other companies, it's going to be a small percentage of the total weight, meaning it's going to be a very small impact on the weight of those companies. So hopefully that makes sense. That's why there's not a huge volume here for Tesla today. That's why this rebalancing stuff is not really all that important to ever factor in. Buybacks, as I mentioned, mergers, those things can affect how market caps and their weights in the index should look. So again, that's part of the rebalancing too, but in generally, these things are pretty inconsequential. The only time it really matters is when you're getting added to a new index and that index has a lot of investors that are benchmarking against it. Not the case with this Russell 1000 situation. So hopefully that makes that all clear, because again, just pretty terrible reporting on that all around. The next thing we've got here is on GigaTexas. So yesterday I mentioned that we had a report of a Model Y VIN long range showing up with, in the 11th digit of the VIN, an A, which indicates that the vehicle is made in Austin. So I speculated yesterday that, okay, something to keep an eye on, but most likely just a mistake, because we know Tesla's only building the 4680, standard range, not called standard range, but standard range model wise at Giga Texas. But it looks like that wasn't just an error. It looks like Tesla has commenced the production of these long range vehicles at Texas. We've had a few reports on the Tesla Motors Club forum here. I've gotten multiple DMs about this, where people have said that they've gotten VINs that are long range. So it looks like Tesla is now starting that production. Someone here spoke with a Tesla advisor, and they said that the long range version from Austin is a 2170 battery. No surprise there. Not a structural battery pack. It is exactly like the Fremont build. So that's exactly what I would have expected. And what we've got going on here is Tesla just basically using the opportunity, using the, not the opportunity, but trying to make up for the slower production ramp of 4680s by adding 2170 production, vehicle production to Giga Texas. Now, just to be clear, that doesn't mean they're producing cells, 2170 cells at Giga Texas. They're just making the battery packs there, just like they would at Giga Nevada, I guess is probably where they're doing those these days. Sorry, I think that was a little bit confusing, but basically, Tesla just basically doing exactly what they'd be doing in Fremont at Texas to get a higher production rate out of Texas while 4680s get ramped up. So we talked before about how on this Elon Musk interview with Tesla owner Silicon Valley in part three, Elon had talked about how the tooling that they needed to be able to do this was stuck at port in China. Just a couple of points on that. As I said at the time, this interview, although it was just published this week, was recorded 3 weeks ago. So there's been quite a bit of time between then and now. And Elon at that time also had said that tooling was stuck in China at that time. So it was already past tense when Elon recorded this 3 weeks ago. So the timeline here, although it does seem quite quick to go from, stuck tooling in China to actually having VINs assigned, it looks like Tesla is basically ready to go on these. And I think this is very exciting because this should allow for a significant increase in production out of Giga Texas. It could indicate that we're at an inflection point in that production ramp, not necessarily for 4680s, but for total vehicle output, which, obviously we all want to see 4680s get ramped up too, but at the end of the day, total vehicle count is what's going to matter. And if Tesla has the capability to produce more 2170 vehicles, that's definitely a win. So I'm excited about this. I think it's a little bit earlier than what I would have expected, but again, Tesla talked about this on the Q1 call. Elon talked about it in that interview, and now we are seeing it come to fruition here already before the end of the second quarter. So it should mean good things ahead in terms of production, even if it's not necessarily all 4680 based from Giga Texas. All right, next we've got an update on Giga Shanghai. So this is coming from Wuhua, and we've got a second source on this as well. But previously we had talked about how Shanghai was supposed to be shut down from July 1st through July 4th. I talked about how there's probably going to be a lengthier shutdown than that as Tesla transforms some of the factory there, does these upgrades to phase one and phase two. So Wuhua here, reporting from Chinese media, phase one and phase two staggered transformation employees for this to more than employees are taking more than 15 days off for this transition. So like we had talked about, kind of 2 weeks should be the expectation. It looks like that's being confirmed here. It also mentions that after the expansion, Tesla will be hiring an additional 4,000 or so workers. So that's the report from Wuhua. And then I don't know, it sounds like this is the sort of the original source, but Late Auto here out of China is also reporting very similar updates. So saying July 1st through the 4th, total holiday, and then, workers will have more than 15 days of vacation, time off, whatever, however Google Translate is working through that. So again, just expect that couple of weeks of downtime. In aggregate, Tesla will have maybe some limited production there after the July 4th, but it is going to be still significant downtime. The important part is that after they do that, they're going to be able to ramp up production significantly. Late Auto here is reporting that they would be expecting to produce about 1,200 Model 3s and more than 2,000 Model Ys per day. So we've heard numbers in the 80,000, 90,000 vehicles per month ballpark. This would potentially even take them a little bit above that, probably to, as they say here, somewhere around 1.1 million per year in terms of capacity, obviously depending on on downtime and shift schedules and things like that. But this should be a really solid rate and lead to, if Q3 goes well, should lead to a really solid Q3, and then especially Q4, where they don't hopefully have to take that 2.5 weeks or whatever it's going to be in July of downtime. So exciting stuff, especially when we pair that with hopefully a little bit of an inflection point here on Giga Texas, and then of course Berlin, which is even hopefully a little bit ahead of Texas as well. All right, last few quick things here for today. So Tesla did go ahead and add enhanced autopilot to the design studio here in the United States. It is a $6,000 option, so that's what it was to, was it what it was expected to be. That's the price that we went through that little simple take rate analysis earlier this week. So half the price of FSD, of course, for Navigate on Autopilot, Lane Change, Auto Park Summon, and Smart Summon. So personally, I don't think it's the most compelling value, but you know, some people will opt into that. I would, if you're interested in those features, to me it kind of makes sense just to go all the way up to full self-driving, but perhaps that's what Tesla has in mind anyway. But it is always nice to have that option. All right, next we've got a little bit more information on the annual shareholder meeting. Tesla in their proxy statement had listed this website, so tesla.com/2022 annual shareholder meeting. And it looks like this is going to be a raffle for how you could attend in person if that is something that you're interested in doing. Basically, you just have to go to this website and submit to Tesla that basically proof of stock ownership as of June 6th. So basically, you'd be getting that from your broker, uploading that here for Tesla, and then they'll have a raffle similar to how they did in years past if you do want to attend in person. Of course, if not, Tesla will be streaming the entire meeting, so no major loss if you're not able to be selected for that. Should be definitely interesting, and it's really not all that long after the Q2 earnings call will be scheduled, probably just a couple of weeks after that Q2 call. All right, last two things here then. It's been a few days since Elon has tweeted. This is actually pretty noteworthy. It's I guess 3 full days now since Elon has tweeted, and yeah, it's been a lot quieter. So I guess this gives people an opportunity to see what it would be like if Elon did tone down the Twitter activity a little bit. I think it's been, you know, it's always mixed, right? It's good and bad. Some of the noise is reduced, but hopefully, at least in my opinion, I like having Elon on Twitter. Hopefully he'll stick around and answer some Tesla stuff. But it has been just a little bit a little bit quieter in his absence. And then last thing, if you did happen to get your hands on one of these limited edition Tesla tequila sets, it sounds like these have started to be delivered. So this is the limited run that Tesla did to kind of clear out the inventory here. They marked the last 420 in series. So these are a little bit more special. If anyone has any of these and wants to sell me one, if you happen to pick up two of them or anything like that, by the time I saw it, I unfortunately did not have that opportunity, but I would be interested. So it's my shameless request for purchase. But I think that is it for today. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you are subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you on Monday for the June 27th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.